flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Mark Schlereth is going to join us at 12:35. Looking forward to talking to Mark. Ben Standing is with us now, and as promised, after Ben, I'll play what Jason Kelce said about Jalen Hurts. I think it's interesting. I think the Jalen Hurts conversation actually is just interesting overall. The dude has come up big in the biggest games for Philadelphia, and yet I think he's minimized by most, including, by the way, heading into the game on Sunday, by me. I didn't think, Ben, he was playing very well. I didn't think their offense seemed capable. I thought it was disjointed. And then we had the injury to boot. And yet, the defense couldn't stop them anytime they were on the field for all intents and purposes. I'm just curious, as you look ahead to next Sunday without our team in it, do you think they're going to beat Kansas City? Do you think he'll play well and they'll play well and win?
Look, he's, like you said, he's got the experience. It's not like he's a bad quarterback. It's just the expectation to get raised when you sign the contract he signed and obviously was in the Super Bowl. I haven't been the biggest of fans, but he played very well in that game. But, you know, look, Saquon Barkley going for 60-yard touchdown run on the first play. I mean, it felt like Washington was playing uphill from there. And, I think, look, they just have a lot of weapons, you know, from the offensive line, the receivers, obviously the running back. So as good as Jalen Hurts may be, and he's paid like he is, he's the rare guy that has a lot around him and doesn't have to be sort of the star to get that thing to work the way Mahomes does, the way, Jaden was this year.
What are you going to do this weekend?
Wow.
Sometimes you have the oddest of delayed responses. You had to think that one through. I'm asking you the question because we don't have football to discuss.
I'm with you. I was trying to think. I was like, all right, that's right. I'm not automatically going to a stadium. My cousin's nephew plays basketball for Haverford, and they're playing at Johns Hopkins on Saturday, so I'm probably going to that.
His nephew. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know.
Who's Haverford playing? Hopkins?
Johns Hopkins, yeah.
D3 college basketball is awesome to watch. There was a time way back in the day I called a bunch of D3 college basketball games. Catholic University games. So it's over now. I know we talked a lot about the game on Monday, but what's going to stand out more than anything else other than the obvious, which is Jaden?
From this season? I just think it's, I mean, hopefully it appears to be that they got back on the path to normalcy. You know, I don't know. None of us can know whether they're going to win Super Bowls or make another NFC Championship game anytime soon or anything, but at least it was confirmation that whatever is going to happen will be done under normal professional circumstances rather than, you know, the clown show that was going on for the last 20 years. I mean, even in the years where they had some success, you just knew that the ceiling was capped because of, you know, what's going on in the ownership group, et cetera. And here that's not the case. On top of it, you have Adam Peters, who looks like, you know, one of the rising stars of general managers in that front office. You know, Dan Quinn had already taken their team to the Super Bowl, got within one game this year, even though this was clearly not the most talented team. So I think to me, like, and also, you know, what that means for the fan base. I mean, just based on anecdotal things I'm aware of, like, you know, I knew so many people who were just like, I'm out. I've made this joke before, but it's for real. Like, people would tell me, friends and family, they don't read my articles because they're sick of this team. And now they're at least saying, hey, you know, I read what you read, you know, whatever, good or bad. And that type of, it's all of that. The people are just like, okay, I'm ready to believe again. And, you know, that seemed impossible even a couple years ago.
Yeah. I agree with that. Look, we're going to have so much time in the coming weeks to look ahead and, you know, discuss what we're hearing and what we're what people are reporting, including people like you, about what they'll be doing. I don't want to leave what was such a magical season this year. And, you know, there were like so many jump out of your seat scream moments during the course of the year. I think the Terry McLaurin catch against Cincinnati was the first one. Obviously, number two was the Hail Mary. I think the 86-yard throw to Terry McLaurin was about as shocking as anything, because how could the Cowboys, with basically no time left, give up that play? The two-point conversion that failed, the touchdown pass to beat the Eagles, the touchdown pass in overtime to beat Atlanta. I mean, the Mariota touchdown pass at the end of the Dallas game, the doink. Like, you could write a book just on the endings in this season. Like, would you rank, if you were ranking the endings, if Hail Mary's number one, would you agree that that's number one?
Yeah, I mean, for pure, you know, holy crap moment, yeah. I mean, a Hail Mary is pretty hard to beat. But on top of it, it was, like, fully defining that this season was off the rails, that this was not just some run-of-the-mill season.
What would be number two?
I mean, the catch against Dallas was pretty shocking, except for the fact that we know what happened immediately afterwards.
Right. Shocking.
I mean, yeah, in a different way. You know, I just go back. Like, I think there's like three stages. There's the Jaden pass to Terry McLaurin in the end zone at Cincinnati. A game I fully expected Washington to lose. Bengals were 0-2. You know, Washington on the road Monday night, rookie quarterback. You know, it's not going to be all, sunshine and roses here. And yet, this kid goes in there, wins the game, and does it in that dramatic or just that spectacular fashion. That was, to me, when I was like, okay, this team is actually pretty good. They're better than I think. When they beat the Bears, you're like, okay, this season there's something really, like, magical here. And then I would say when they beat the Eagles in overtime, despite five turnovers, Jaden throwing five touchdown passes, is when I was like, okay, this team can actually do something interesting. And then I will say the last one for me was when Jaden basically by himself in the fourth quarter in overtime beat Atlanta, that was when I was like, okay, this kid isn't just having a good year. He's not just good. This is elite. He took the ball over the way you imagine your superstars doing it. So, those were sort of, for me, like the markers of how this season went.
Yeah, you know, the Bears game is such an interesting game because they had, you know, the week before, they had destroyed the Panthers after losing to the Ravens, which was a good bounce back. And, you know, the Bears had been playing better heading into that game. They had won a couple in a row, including the game, I think it was in London against the Jags. Washington won that game not playing well. You know, they didn't play that game well, and they had it in control for much of it, and then all of a sudden, Chicago goes nuts in the third quarter. It was the DeAndre Swift touchdown run that completely changed that game from, you know, 60 yards out or whatever it was, and then all of a sudden, Caleb Williams started to make plays, and that actually would have been a really devastating loss, and that's what it was looking like, you know, in the moment. It's funny because we've talked about all these games so many times, but I feel like that Bears game was so crucial. Like, the Panthers were terrible. The Bears weren't that great, but you had it in control, and then you lost it in the fourth quarter because you couldn't get Chicago off the field, and it came down to a Hail Mary. Yeah, that was a lot of, like, wow, what's going on here? What kind of season is this?
Also, Jaden gets his rib hurt the week before, gets knocked out in the first quarter, and we weren't even sure he was going to play. To then have played, and yeah, you're like you said, it wasn't their best game, but he still had a pretty good game in general. And then the Hail Mary, you're like, wow, this kid is tough. He's playing, and this is what's going on. I mean, you know, luck or not, there's sometimes things like that just feel utterly magical. So for him to have come in, and I won't call it the Jordan flu game, but you know, we're like, well, hey, now you're gonna play, and then he does that, you're like, oh my Lord, this is crazy.
Yeah, I had to look back the other day just to find out how it was that he threw for 326 in the game and rushed for 52 yards in the game, and they only had 12 points until the final play of the game, and needed, you know, Tyreek Stevenson to be mocking fans to pull off a shocking win. It was kind of a weird game for them. They got penalized a little bit. They didn't convert on third down as much, and even though the yardage was there, the points weren't there in that game. I think right now, before we get into in future discussions, get into, you know, the needs and the availability out there in free agency, et cetera, and then start talking about the draft, of course we will. I think the number one thing that I was hoping would happen has already happened, and that is Cliff Kingsbury's coming back. So I'd ask you, was there a legit opportunity for him, or was it more about him just saying no to any kind of legitimate opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, as far as we know, you know, from what I'd heard and been reported, that the two teams that showed interest or wanted to interview him were the Bears and the Saints. Now, if the Washington had lost to Tampa Bay in that first game, you know, then who knows, maybe things could have elevated a bit more, but you know, when you look at this cycle and the seven teams that were involved, only the Bears and Patriots had, you know, an interesting enough quarterback that you might think, okay, like, if I have, you know, because, look, he's getting paid, Cliff is still getting paid by the Cardinals, right? He's got this opportunity here going into year two with Jaden Daniels after what they just accomplished. Seeing that out doesn't seem like an unreasonable thought. So, you know, the situation would have to be pretty good unless somebody threw you tons of money. And, you know, he obviously, you know, Ben Johnson was getting that treatment this cycle. So when stories got put out there this week, hey, he's definitely saying, I mean, I guess I was kind of like, well, no duh, the Saints is probably the worst of the seven jobs. Like, I can't imagine that was ever a thing in Cliff Kingsbury's mind. They have no quarterback, terrible cap space. They've just been sort of a med team. They don't have a top five pick to get a quarterback, you know, likely. So there's nothing attractive about that job. So yeah, to me, like, unless they had lost to Tampa and the Bears thing got interesting, which seems unlikely based on how Ben Johnson went, that I don't think he was really in the mix for any of these things. Again, does Jacksonville get more interesting? They've got Trevor Lawrence. Can you talk yourself into that? Maybe, but I, you know, seems unlikely.
After Jaden, in terms of the setup for 2024, drafting Jaden, could you make the case that hiring Cliff was the second most important thing that happened?
So we're not including Peters? after
yeah,
that?
Fair enough. I'm not counting Peters and Quinn. I'm talking about once you had Peters and Quinn in terms of putting together a staff, putting together a roster, and they flipped it significantly, what was the second most, you know, important acquisition after Daniels?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, the over the course of the season, not just Jaden Daniels as an individual, the offense was easily the most impressive part of the team for most of the year. There was the stretch where was Jaden hurt? Was he not hurt still? Where the offense kind of dipped a bit. But beyond that, the offense was just, you know, look, I mean, the first month of the year, all we're talking about is his insane efficiency records. He's setting the punter not punting for three games. And obviously Jaden's a lot of that, but it's also Cliff Kingsbury not only having a system that he was able to modify for what was going on here, but the ability to help to be in partnership with Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin and trying to figure out how to make this work. You know, clearly that this whole staff, you know, was, you know, different pieces, right? You have Brian Johnson coming from the Eagles where he had been an OC. Anthony Lynn's been a former head coach. Tevita Pritchett was a holdover, all that. And somehow they seemingly made this work pretty seamlessly, like no sense of there's any issues. And, you know, the result was Jaden Daniels and this offense executing at a high level. So, yeah, I can go with that for Kingsbury. And, you know, admittedly, I think it was a very, maybe not polarizing choice, but it was like, really? Because there was that whole Cliff, you know, second half of his team's decline narrative that was out there. And, you know, the Arizona thing didn't end great. So there were definitely questions about it, but he, you know, certainly lived up to, you know, any realistic feeling in the momentum.
You know, when you think back to kind of a year ago, shortly after Quinn was hired, in terms of the offseason and the reaction to every hire and every addition, the only addition that I don't think was controversial or didn't have naysayers, look, because Jaden had some naysayers. There were a lot of people that would have preferred a different quarterback. There were people that would have preferred they trade back and build up the offensive line and keep Sam Howell. But I think the only, you know, I was thinking about this last night, the only addition made during the offseason that didn't have any pushback to it whatsoever was the hiring of Adam Peters. Because he was the number one GM candidate and Washington got him. Can you think of anybody else that didn't have skepticism attached to the signature?
That's a good question. I mean, probably not. Like, obviously they didn't have any, like, you know, break the bank free agents. I mean, I think like Frankie Louvu in general seemed to be a pretty popular one because it got, you know, they needed that edge pass rusher, but he also wasn't, you know, not like they signed Michael Parsons or, you know, one of these, you know, truly viewed dominant defensive ends. But, you know, I think that one's pretty good. But other than that, you're right. I mean, you know, even Mikey Sanders, still second-round pick, turned out to be a pretty good player. But, you know, the size questions, they had traded away the pick that the Eagles took to get Cooper DeJean, so there's automatically this comparison. So, yeah, there was things going on there. And, you know, maybe Todd Arbiatish. Can we say that one? Because I think everybody kind of was like, "Oh, good, a center who actually plays good. This is good."
I guess. Yeah, I mean, right, that's fine. There were a lot of signings that actually just didn't have much of a reaction, so I guess they would all qualify for, you know, no resistance. I think I remember being excited about Louvu, and I think people who had followed and, you know, more than just our team understood that he was definitely an up and comer, and the deal seemed perfectly reasonable. But, yeah, I'll give you Biotish as well. Look, the Sanristil pick was exciting, but remember, it came after people were scratching their heads as to why they would take a defensive tackle with their first second-round pick.
Right. Neither of those guys was an offensive tackle, which is what everybody was hoping for. Obviously, they ended up getting one in Coleman, but, you know, yeah, not the same not the same situation at all, but I still think one of the crazier things is, you know, they signed, you know, roughly 30 free agents, but really they probably was closer to like a 20 number in terms of guys that were, like, there were 24 new veterans on the team week one, and of all those guys, almost every single one of them hit to some degree. Like Mike Davis feels like the only one who was kind of because he got knocked out of the rotation by week two. Everybody else, I mean, to, you know, I think largely had a moment or two, if not, yeah, was a real starter. It's really, I mean, you know, again, so much had to go right this year. And if you play the simulation 100 times, you know, I don't know if they're going to, I don't think they're winning 12 games very often, but they did in this scenario. And, you know, just kind of everything worked. And, you know, got to give obviously Peters and Quinn a ton of credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking through the list of free agent signings from last year. I mean, players that, you know, barely even got mentioned as additions. A guy like Michael Walker, who ended up playing very well in special teams. You know, Zacchaeus would be an example. Even Igbinoghene. I mean, I don't think anybody knew that he could potentially be out there as much as any corner on the team. You mentioned Mike Davis. Obviously, the biggest bust would be Brandon McManus because of what happened, but it's not like they paid him, you know, a lot of money. It was a one-year deal worth, what, $5 million or whatever it was. They hit on so many. So many ended up making significant contributions. Wagner, Ertz, Eckler, Mariota, you know, every opportunity he got, not to mention behind the scenes. Fowler, Luvu, obviously. You mentioned Biotish and Chin. Armstrong. I think in many ways Armstrong was one of the underappreciated players of the season and definitely the postseason.
You know what? One thing that's funny, and a buddy of mine who listens to you pointed this out, and I was talking about this a little bit on my podcast the other day. If we go individually on the defensive side, it's going to be pretty hard to figure out who you would give the red pen to.
I know.
And yet, they were terrible against the run the whole season. And that's the part that's so interesting. And I do wonder, like, if we have to be realistic and start talking more about the scheme. Or something doesn't make sense. How could it be that all the players we view as been pretty good, and yet they were just run over week after week after week? And, you know, the secondary, by basic numbers, yards allowed, looks to be pretty good. But I think we all are realistic that, you know, that one of those cornerback spots for most of the year was getting picked on or not working out at all, which is why they went, they cut Forbes, they benched essentially St. Jude's, they benched Davis, eventually trade for Lattimore, and it wasn't so great for him. So that's what I'm like, it's weird, like, how is it, it's not like they were dominant in the back end, and yet they couldn't stop the run. I don't know, this is odd that it never worked out, and yet again, we're not sitting here going, boy, they really have to, you know, they need an edge rusher, but we're not saying, boy, they got to get rid of this guy, this guy, this guy.
I mean, I think some fans would say, you know, it's time to move on from the, you know, the longtime defensive tackles. But no, you're right. I mean, it's sat here every week. I'm like, God, I think Luvu's good. I mean, Luvu and Wagner are all pros. They made the all-pro team. I think that, you know, Dorrance Armstrong's not bad. I think that, you know, Fowler Jr. is a good pass rusher. I love Chin and Martin. I love Sandra still. And then it's like, yeah, but something's not adding up here because, you know, I just went through it. Basically, the elite backs that they faced averaged 6 yards a carry against them this year. So something isn't there, and we haven't really focused on scheme and X's and O's and Joe Witt Jr. specifically. I don't, you know, it's funny, everybody that would know expert-wise, experience-wise, also comes up with, you know, their hands up in the air going, I don't know why. The players aren't bad. The scheme's not terrible. I don't know why. So maybe it'll completely change with the same players next year. Although I do think at the very least, one thing that they did not have an edge. They did not have a defensive end run stopper. That's the one thing that you can say clearly did not exist on this roster.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, defensive end is one spot where they can do, they need to upgrade. The one spot opposite Armstrong is kind of a hole at this point. You know, Cleveland Farrell and Dante Fowler are both free agents, so we'll see where that goes. I mean, Fowler may come back, but, you know, I think he's a good example of what we're talking about. 10.5 sacks, that's probably like seven sacks more than anybody should have realistically thought. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating slightly, but not much, except that, you know, Dante Fowler against the run is not spectacular. You know, he played the fewest amount of snaps by percentage in the NFC Championship game than he had all year against a team with Saquon Barkley. I don't think that's a coincidence.
That's,
And
yeah, that's not a coincidence. And they didn't have enough third and longs, which were obvious passing situations.
Right. And I had Logan Paulson on this past week. He was kind enough to be with me all throughout the playoffs. And we talked about this, and I just flat out said, and we sort of capped the season. What happened? Why could they just not stop the run at all? I mean, what's the deal? Scheme or what's the deal? And, you know, obviously there's a lot to get into, including, look, Dan Quinn's teams. We don't talk about it in this way because we're focused on this team, but Dan Quinn's teams the last few years have gotten blown out in their last game of the playoffs, and getting run on was a huge factor. Those are different teams, but I'm just saying there's something to wonder about it from a scheme standpoint. But their other part is, the edge rushers that they have, and that includes, like, say, Luvu. They are the good players. They obviously work for the team, but they are also a lot of risk takers. You know, as fun as it is to watch Luvu dive over the pile, it also means you're exposing yourself to the other team doing, you know, if you're wrong, you're really wrong, you know, right. Because you're just left your feet. And Fowler is going for the pass rush far more than he is typically, looking to stop the run. The Saquon Barkley play, he was his lane that got wide open. He sort of got tangled up in the line, but nonetheless, he didn't react to it great, and then Barkley shoots up the hole, and there you go. So, yeah, that is an area they need to clearly improve on. But like I said, if we told just average people, hey, you want them to bring back Dante Fowler and everybody on the line, yeah. Do that. Great.
I agree.
Okay, well.
Yeah, and the other part of it is most of the time that they got run on, they still won the game somehow. I got to run. Thanks. I'll talk to you later.
See you, man.
When I come back, I want you to hear what Jason Kelce said about Jalen Hurts. Mark Schlereth will join us after that. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Mark Schlereth coming up in 6 minutes. Jason Kelce on his podcast with his brother, right, Travis Denton? That's the podcast?
No, this clip is from WIP.
Oh, my fault. He's a guest on WIP. I thought it was from their podcast. I read about it this morning. Didn't realize that I had attributed it incorrectly, but that's okay. The point is to play what Jason Kelce said about Jalen Hurts. Here it was.
I think Jalen never gets enough credit for a lot of the things he does for this offense. And I don't, Saquon Barkley would not have the season he had without having Jalen Hurts as a quarterback. And that's a reality of it. And he never gets credit for that. And a little bit, but all of that goes to the offensive line and Saquon. Mm-hmm. The reality is his threat as a runner, his threat as an RPO person, all of that stuff opens up so many other things. And then, he throws the talented receivers. I mean, most quarterbacks are good when they throw, are only good if they have talented receivers to throw it to. It's very rare that a quarterback is good throwing to bad players. What Josh Allen has done this year was truly remarkable, to be honest with you. But I think it's, to me, he has cemented himself as a competitor and as a leader. He's just done so well this postseason, so I'm really happy for Jalen, and I'm obviously happy for Nick.
I love that about Jalen Hurts. It's obviously a high IQ, all-time, the Hall of Fame center that's talking about that, and his former center. But all of these quarterbacks that are a part of the run game benefit the running backs. I mean, Saquon Barkley's great. We never saw these results in New York. Part of it is they had a bad team around him. Part of it was he was injured. Saquon Barkley is an elite back, no doubt, just like Derrick Henry is. But God, I mean, the benefit they get from having their quarterback be a big part of the running game. That's why, watching a Bijan Robinson or watching a Jahmyr Gibbs, at times this year, I mean, we came in here blown away watching these guys because they didn't have the benefit of a quarterback that was a part of the run game. I mean, their styles and their ability to get yards. I mean, look, Detroit's got a great offensive line. Atlanta's offensive line was pretty good as well. For much of the season, both of those teams could really throw the football, which benefited the running game as well. But man, Saquon and Derrick Henry with the two moves they made in the offseason to two teams with running quarterbacks quarterbacks, part of the run game, so huge. I think the other part of this is just Jalen Hurts knows how to manage a football game. You know, here we are a week later, because a week ago I was saying there's something wrong with it. It doesn't look right. Andy's hurt. I think we can win. I think this might be the week the defense actually has results. And it didn't. You know, gave up 55, just a little bit off on that one. But I'll tell you what Hurts has done, man. He has protected the football. He has not turned it over since November 10th. And he seems totally content with not producing statistics in a win or needing to produce statistics in a win. Understanding, by the way, that even when he doesn't generate the statistical numbers and they win, often the running game in particular is benefiting from just his ability to run the football game. I mean, he was 20 of 28 for 246 yards in the game Sunday, one touchdown, no turnovers. And witnessing that game, as we all did, he just seemed to make the right decision. I think it was some of the plays he made that didn't turn into anything that were the most valuable plays. The game management plays, avoiding sacks, getting outside and being able to throw the ball away. There were three or four of those that saved big lost yardage plays and probably sacks that would have led to punts in giving up possession of the game. The week before, no touchdowns, no interceptions, just 128 yards on the ground against the Rams, except that he had 70 rushing yards, and Saquon Barkley went for 200-plus. There's something about Hurts that I think football fans, including me going into the game last week, miss that is so valuable. He is a guy that understands each game and what it will take for his team to win. He doesn't care if that means stats for him or no stats. And I think in the biggest games of his career, he has really produced in the clutch. You know, he did on Sunday. He did against the Rams. He did against the Packers. He did in that game in which everybody said, well, they're going to have to throw the ball to beat Pittsburgh, so he threw for nearly 302 touchdowns. Going back to the Super Bowl in the 2022 season when he was, you know, 304 yards, you know, in passing, 70 yards rushing on 15 carries with three touchdowns. I bet he plays well next week. We'll talk more about that next week. Mark Schlereth next. Mark Schlereth is a three-time Super Bowl champion. Once here in 1991, twice in Denver. He has a great podcast called The Stinkin' Truth. You can get that anywhere you get a podcast. You can follow him on X on Twitter, at Mark Schlereth. He joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Obviously, too, as we all know, he calls games for Fox, and I think he had a couple of Washington games this year. I'm just curious, you know, and I saw some of your tweets during Washington's playoff run, but it seemed to me you were genuinely excited for the team that you first won a ring with to see it back on that stage again 33 years after the last time it was on the stage, and you were a part of it.
Yeah, it was amazing. And, you know, I think for most of us former players, it was such, you know, the organization at the time was such a crown jewel. And to see what happened to it under the stewardship of, I don't even want to say his name, but to see what happened to it, you know, under Daniel Snyder, it was depressing and upsetting. And, you know, then to have it change hands and to have him ousted from the NFL and to watch the organization just kind of morph back into what it once was and to be embraced by the new leadership and to be, you know, brought back into the fold. And I did an event there. I had one weekend where I wasn't calling a game, and we did an alumni event there. And it was the biggest turnout of alumni that they had since, you know, since Daniel Snyder took over. It was, guys were embraced, guys were brought back into the fold. Right. And so there's a genuine excitement, just like there is, you know, in the DMV about what they were able to accomplish and what they, you know, what they have become. So it is, it's in great hands. And Dan, you know, Dan Quinn is an unbelievable human being and a great coach. And to watch what Jaden Daniels, it just was fun to be a part of again. It was cool to root, you know, for the Commanders.
Yeah, you know what's so interesting as you talk, because you and I are basically the same age, and I've compared it to when Brett Favre got to the Packers in the 90s. The Packers had not been great for like 30 years, you know, 25 years, something like that. And it wasn't necessarily because of ownership, because they're publicly held. But I remember as an NFL fan, even though I didn't remember Lombardi's Packers, but I remember feeling like, wow, the Packers are back. And I compared it to this year and the way people around the league felt. They, people of a certain age like you, understood, you played for the team, understood what Washington meant to the league for a long period of time. And I got this sense that people around the league, not just here, were genuinely into them being back and being relevant again.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree with you. And you know, it, like when I came into the NFC East as a member of the Washington Redskins, man, the NFC East were the bullies right. of the National Football League. You know, the Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles and us, and it was the Cowboys. I mean, it was a murderer's row of football teams. And you know, you knew if you came out of the NFC East, you had a great chance to get into the playoffs and, you know, and run roughshod, because that division was so tough. You won that division, you were a damn good football team. And, you know, and the success that both the Giants had had and obviously the Redskins had had under Joe Gibbs, it was just a really cool time to be a member of the NFC East. And then, you know, for the Redskins, it just fell apart, obviously, when Daniel Snyder took over. So, again, if you know the history of the league at all, you know how important those teams were, how important the nation's capital was, how important RFK Stadium was, what it was like back in the day. And so it's just so cool to see that kind of, you know, to see that kind of excitement in that area, in that town, man. I called a couple of their games. I called a game early, I guess against the Giants, I think week two. Right. And to watch the buzz in week two, even after what they opened the season with a loss in Tampa, I believe, but to watch the buzz of what was going on in the city at that time, it was like, it was palpable, man. It's a really cool thing to witness.
So, you know, when this season, and it's over now, when it's looked back on, I'm curious as to whether or not you'll view it similarly. Obviously, what you said, nothing would have ever happened good as long as Dan owned the team. So once Dan sold, we had a chance for the first time in a quarter century. But there still are no guarantees you're going to go 12-5 and get to the NFC Championship game. This season was about Jaden Daniels more than anything else. You agree with that?
Yeah, I do. But it was about, you know, restoring confidence. It was about developing a culture, a winning right. culture. It was about, you know, it's so interesting. As I travel around the National Football League and I'm calling games and I'm in different facilities, man, It's crazy just how it works. And, you know, I say this about teams that aren't very good, and I say it all the time. You know, teams that aren't very good think they're working hard. They think they're preparing. They think they're studying. They think they're putting in the time. They think that they're doing everything that you have to do to win. And I walk out of some of those facilities and go, and I think to myself, well, they think it, but it's not close to what championship teams do, what championship teams put in, the way championship teams practice on Friday. Like, there's a difference. And, you know, and I saw that instantly when I walked onto that football field and saw Dan Quinn doing what he does and seeing that team prepare the way they prepare. And then you talk to Jaden Daniels, man, and you walk out of that meeting going, wow, they're in good hands. Like, that dude puts the work in. That guy is, you know, I used to say this to my son all the time when he became a professional pitcher, you know, when we got drafted in the first round and went on to play Major League Baseball. And I said to him all the time, hey, just because you play a pro sport doesn't make you a professional.
Right.
I came into the Washington Redskins, man, and there were a lot of professional football players in that locker room. And I learned through osmosis, through, you know, work and being prepared, I learned how to be a professional, and I was a professional freaking football player. That's what I did. And it's important to have that atmosphere, that culture that teaches you how to do that, because it's different than
playing in college. You know, you're to your own devices. Once you walk out of that facility, you can do whatever the hell you want to do. And so to watch that kind of that metamorphosis and to watch it, you know, change, it was fun. It was fun to see it.
Do you think that the focus on that, the culture, which, you know, includes the kind of people you bring into your locker room, do you think it's more vital today than it was when you were playing because fewer players perhaps don't approach it as professionally as they did in your day?
No, I still think for the most part, I don't know why this is, but it only takes a few guys in any locker room to tip the scales. Like you can have 48 guys that are committed, right? That are hard workers. You put four or five guys in your locker room that aren't professionals, that run the streets, that do those things, and the gravitational pull is far stronger for those four or five guys than it is for the 48 guys that you have that are committed. Like the guys that are making a decision of what they're going to be, the gravitational pull of four or five turds is unbelievable.
Right.
And I don't know why that is. I really don't know why that is. Maybe it's culture. I always explain culture as like irrigation. I'm a big landscaper. And there's always that spot in anybody's yard that you'll know what I'm talking about. If you have a yard, that's what I call hydrophobic, that just for whatever reason, that one spot in your yard will yellow up quicker than any other spot in your yard. And it's, you know, the composition of the clay or whatever it is, you know, the clay in the soil or, you know, maybe it's a little higher than the rest of the yard. So the water kind of, the water takes this path of least resistance, you know, and it goes around that one spot in your yard. And that's how culture works. You know, culture will take the path of least resistance. So if it's not worked on a daily basis, if it's not preached, if it's not, if your coaching staff and your players don't show the example of it all the time, you know, guys just tend to, human nature is just, what do I have to do to get by? And I'm telling you, just three or four guys on your team that aren't good guys, and boy, they'll have an incredibly negative impact on your locker room.
Yeah, avoid those and find the four or five guys that are pulling gravitationally in the right direction. Just out of curiosity, on the 91 team, I think maybe you were one of them, but who were the others?
I mean, we had a load of guys that, you know, Daryl Green is the dear friend, just a professional. You know, Russ Grimm, Jeff Bostic, Joe Jacoby, that whole group. I mean, we had nothing but great guys. Ernest Biner. We had nothing but guys that were committed professionals, great dudes. So, like, and it's easy when you have a team full of those guys, and you know Joe Gibbs is leading your football team. Everybody just kind of falls into that line, to that realm, because nobody wants to let anybody down, you know. And so, anyhow, I can't speak highly enough about that group of people.
We're talking to Mark Schlereth. They get to the NFC title game, and the score got sideways. I personally feel like the game was much more competitive than the final score indicated, but I'm curious as to whether or not you think what was revealed in that game is a gap that they need to close on Philadelphia, and if so, just kind of describe it and what they need to do to close that gap.
Yeah, well, I think that obviously anytime you turn the ball over four times and the team scores 28 points off four turnovers, you're losing that game, and you're losing it in pretty much epic fashion. So, you know, henceforth the 55-31 or whatever it was. So that's going to happen. But with that said, or 23, whatever the score
was. 23. I was going to take the 31, but you figured it out. Yeah, 23. 32-point loss.
Yeah, so I mean, that's going to happen. I think about Philly in general. Where Philly is so damn good is on both lines of scrimmage.
Right.
Philly will bludgeon you on both lines of scrimmage, and that really is their superpower. They can absolutely dominate both lines of scrimmage, and when you can do that as a football team, boy, it makes up for a multitude of sins, right? And it makes, you know, they have this old, there's this old saying, a great cornerback can shut down, you know, one great wide receiver. A great pass rush will shut down all great wide receivers. You know, it'll shut down your whole passing game. And so when you dominate the line of scrimmage like they do on both sides, they're a tough team to beat. I would tell you that I think they're one of the most physically talented football teams in all the National Football League. I thought that the entirety of the season. And, you know, if you put them against Kansas City, there's only two positional battles that I would say, oh, yeah, Kansas City's got this over the Eagles. Like, I'd say O-line, running back, receiving core, that includes tight ends and wide receivers, all go to Philly. You know, and I would say defensive line / linebacker / defensive secondary goes to Philly. They'd win that kind of confidence battle. The two places where I would give it to the Kansas City Chiefs are the quarterback and the kicker.
Yeah, I was wondering what the second one was. Then I was thinking, Elliott's had a tough year. Maybe he's about to go kicker here.
Yeah, but then you know, but you say, hey man, critical moments and decision making and execution. Like that's Andy Reid, that's Steve Spagnuolo, and that's you know, and that's Patrick Mahomes, and so that's where the Chiefs constantly get an advantage.
Did we lose Mark?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No. I hear you. You know, I was just talking about Jalen Hurts before you came on, and Jason Kelsey had said on WIP in Philadelphia that, you know, he really gave him a lot of credit. You know, first of all, Saquon Barkley benefiting from a dual threat quarterback and Jalen being a part of the run game. I went into that game last week, Mark, thinking something looks off, something looks disjointed with Philadelphia's offense. He's banged up. We got a chance, like a legit chance. And I thought he was spectacular in the game. And I think that there's an appreciation for him in these big spots that maybe is deserved. What do you say?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any question. I mean, he's one of the winningest quarterbacks. And I know that wins aren't a quarterback stat, but he is. And unselfish. You know, we just talked about selfishness and culture and all that stuff. Like, their big thing with him is don't turn the ball over, and we've got plenty of weapons, so we don't need to be, you know, we don't need you to be a superstar to win games. And I love that. I love the fact that, like, okay, what do you need me to do today? You know, throw it 22 times and hand it off and use some of the RPO stuff. And, like, they are loaded that way. And I think what we tend to not give credit for is They're not asking him to go out and you know, be the guy, the difference to win the game. It's basically, hey, just don't lose it for us, right? Just don't turn the ball over.
Right.
But when they need him to make a critical play, I mean, fourth down and five, he hits, I mean, absolute dime piece to A.J. Brown down the sideline, blitz pickup by Saquon Barkley.
Well, that was a hold on Barkley. You saw that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But
that was a massive play in the game because it's 14-12 with Washington having the ball if they call it.
Yeah, and listen, man, the initial part of the block was really good. There was a hold late, and the officials just thought they were officiating Kansas City for a second, so they lost their minds for a second.
Right.
But there was a third down and six where Saquon has another blitz pickup, great one, and you know, they converted to Devontae Smith on the way to a touchdown drive. You know, off the ball, Saquon blocking on the quarterback draw there, Jalen Hurts scores a touchdown. Right. Like those things are things that I think we tend not to look at, you know, because we're watching Saquon take the first carry of the game, 60 yards for a touchdown. But they are so good and so balanced that they don't need their quarterback to win them a football game. But guess what? When he has to produce and he has to go out there and make the plays for them to win, he can do that too. And that's what's really impressive.
Two more from Mark Schlereth. Appreciate the time as always. When you look at Washington in the season they just completed, do you consider this to be a nice, magical kind of a season, all-time rookie quarterback season, but standalone, or do you think it's the beginning of a run?
Oh, I think it's the beginning of something special. I mean, I think that, you know, you've shown as a football team, like at the beginning of the year, they were nowhere near as good as they were toward the end of the year, right? I mean, like Jaden Daniels definitely just kept growing and growing and growing right before our eyes. And, you know, what I saw after week one and what I saw after week two, he just exponentially grew. And ultimately, I mean, you think about what they asked him to do. This was not, hey, let's run the ball and play great defense and do that. They're going for it on fourth down. They're like, normally, and this, I'll give Dan Quinn a lot of credit. Like, normally defensive coaches are going to err on the side of protecting their defense. Dan Quinn was like, screw my defense. I don't care. We're going for it every fourth down because my offense and my quarterback are my best players.
Yep.
And they got to the point where they just put it on Jaden's shoulders all the time, said, hey, man, fourth down, go convert. Hey, man, third down, go convert. Go convert with your legs. Go convert with your arm. Go do whatever you have to do. But you're in charge. We trust you. We believe in you. And so the pressure and what they were asking him to do, they weren't asking him to manage the game and we'll just run the hell up the ball and play great defense and do all those things. No, they were saying, you go win this game for us. And, I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen, I mean, I know I've never seen it. I don't know that there's ever been, is how I should qualify that, a better rookie season by anybody in the history of the NFL at the quarterback position anyhow.
I mean, you could make the case at all positions, but definitely quarterback for sure.
Yeah.
I got 30 seconds. Who do you like next week?
I hate the Kansas City Chiefs with the white hot intensity of a thousand suns because I used to play for the Broncos, so my hatred for them is bigger than my hatred for the Eagles. I want the Eagles to win.
All right. Well, you know, you were a part of what I would call the greatest revenge game in franchise history. 2 months after the body bag game, going to the vet and ending Buddy Ryan's career. That was thrilling. Hey, you hated Philadelphia that day.
Amen.
Thanks for doing this. As always, hope you're well. Enjoy next week.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Mark Schlereth, everybody. The podcast is The Stinkin' Truth, and you can follow Mark, as always, on X at Mark Schlereth. All right. I do want to mention real quickly that Mark was joined by Odyssey. We were joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, The Stinkin' Truth podcast. Make sure to check out The Stinkin' Truth podcast on the Odyssey app, wherever you get it. And also, are you ready to win big and live it up in Sin City? It's the Slam Dunk in Vegas on the Team 980. Listen for your chance to win a flyaway trip to Las Vegas with three friends and $20,000 in spending money for the first two rounds of the college basketball tournament. Winning is easy. Just download the free Odyssey app, log on, listen to the Team 980 for a chance to win the experience of a lifetime. Listen each day for an hour to earn your daily entry. This is a national contest. More details available at odyssey.com/slamdunk. Have a good weekend. Chris is up next.